Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloney. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
I'm sorry. I have to explain now why I'm laughing. I'm sorry. Chris and I have switched roles today, and he's in charge of making this go live, and this has been a learning process. And so we just realized we were live. So welcome to episode 27 of Edu All-Stars. Today we've got Tony Vincent with us. Tony is a former fifth grade teacher who's also served as the elementary technology specialist and is now an independent consultant based in Phoenix, Arizona. Co-written the book Handhelds for Teachers and Administrators, and also leads a really cool conference in Arizona called the K-12 Tech Camp. Thanks for being here today with us, Tony. We really appreciate you giving us some of your time.
My pleasure.
And Tony, well, if you want to give us just your Twitter handle too to start with.
Tony Vincent.
Oh, easy enough.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, we'll go ahead and jump right in. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in the field of education?
Well, probably like many teachers, I decided to become a teacher when I was in sixth grade. I just liked teaching others, and so I always kind of think of myself as been in teacher's college since sixth grade, because since I knew I was going to be a teacher, I studied like every teacher I had, noting the things that I really loved, and then knowing like what I didn't like, and you know, I definitely did not want to be like Mrs. Neiman, the screaming demon, my fifth grade teacher. But there are a lot of others. I had some good examples and some non-examples of what to be as a teacher. So, graduated college, went straight into college of education. Taught when I started teaching, I looked so young that. The parents came in for meet the teacher night, and they come in the room and then they leave. Meet the teacher night, everybody's wearing like their school t-shirt. So I got a school t-shirt. I'm sitting in the room. The parents would come in and leave. And finally, I like got to tell them, I'm the teacher. Like, you're old enough to be the teacher. I did a special program my first year too, where I got my master's degree and did my first year of teaching. So that
wow.
Pretty much a blur.
Yeah,
but really worth it, because I learned a lot of things that I took with me my whole teaching career.
But did you always want to do fifth grade?
I did. I ran a before and after school program for kids K through five, and fifth grade is really kind of where they think I'm funny still. I like my sense of humor, and they get it. They're somewhat independent, but I can learn lots from them too. So yeah, it was a good age for me.
See, and that's what I teach. I love fifth graders just because for those same reasons.
Yeah. People always ask, you know, why do you teach middle school? And I'm like, well, because I'm basically like an eighth grader. I mean, we laugh at the same jokes. It's just, we get each other. We're on the same level on a lot of things. So.
Well, that's what I expect from middle school teachers, too, when I do workshops with them now. You know, I know they're going to act exactly like their students.
Yeah, that's it. That's basically what you get.
Yeah.
So what made you move from teaching into the consulting world?
Well, it was really kind of an accident. I was teaching fifth grade, and then I made the switch to be my school's technology specialist, where I was teaching kindergarten through fifth grade and the teachers. And I guess kind of backing up, I did a lot with technology in my classroom. We had one of the very first classroom websites in 1999. If you went to Yahoo and went to education, K-12, and then there were like a dozen or so websites, and my website, we called it Planet Fifth, the students named it one year, was one of them there. So we kind of got known for having this site, and then in 2001, each of my students got a Palm Pilot. So we were one-to-one with Palm Pilots in 2001, and so we wrote about that on our website, and that was kind of a big deal for a while too, actually, because it was a low-cost computer that you could put in the hands of kids. So we had people visiting our classroom, and students were showing off what they knew and what they could do, and that led to, oh, well, Tony, could you come to our school and show what you're doing? Could you speak at this conference? Could you do this and that? And pretty soon, my summers were filled, my spring break was filled, and I love teaching. I love my school. I never dreamt of leaving it, but I really had an opportunity to go to other schools and see what other teachers are doing, and now that's I I left my school 7 years ago now, so I've been consulting for 7 years.
Do you miss the classroom at all?
I do. Every time I do a workshop, and now it's been long enough where there are things that I just could have never done 7 years ago in a classroom, and so I always think, oh, if I just had a group of kids that I could take from the beginning of the year to the end, the things we could do, it would be so awesome.
Well, you know, one of the things I read on your website that I'm dying to hear more about is when you were teaching fifth grade, you had your students write book reviews on Amazon. Where did that come from? What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, that's because so I started teaching in 1998, and the web in 1998 was a different place because no blogs, Twitter, wikis. I mean, you just didn't get to publish. And I didn't know how to make my own classroom website yet, but I knew that if I could have my students do something for an authentic reason, like they, instead of writing their book reviews just so that I can grade them and give it back to them, you know, I wanted them to do something authentic. And so the one place where you could actually actually publish something online was Amazon. So I just put them under my account, but they typed them up in Microsoft Word, and then I copied and pasted them into Amazon. And actually, I have a screenshot of this. To Amazon's credit, they don't delete book reviews. So my fifth grader's book reviews from the late 90s are still there. You go to read Chocolate Fever, and before you decide to buy the book and spend your time reading it, you can read what kids in the 90s thought about it.
That's cool.
That is cool. One of the things you also created was a kind of a podcast called Radio Willow Web, and back in 2005. And I got a note here that says that it's the first podcast for an American elementary school. So how'd that come to be?
Well, I tuned into podcasting really early before Apple even had it part of iTunes, and we were doing at our school at the time. We put Willow in front of everything because the school's name is Willowdale. So we had Willow Cam, and we did this weekly show, which took kids like a whole week. A different grade level would do it, and it was so much work because they had to prepare the visuals and practice that I guess I could have done this before podcasting, but it didn't occur to me until I heard some audio podcasts that our kids could do that, and it would take a fraction of the time, but yet they could get their ideas across and still be doing things for an audience, but it doesn't have to be so intensive. And I thought the teachers in my building could really relate more to that. And with audio, you can stop and, you know, with a GarageBand, re-record and from where they left off instead of doing a whole retake. So I latched onto that really fast. And when Apple did open up the podcast section of the iTunes store, Radio Willow Web was one of two podcasts in the education category, K-12 at the time.
Wow.
So we got a lot of downloads and lots of email responses, which only made the students want to participate more. And we had this format that I think was really classroom friendly, where we have a host who introduces a variety of segments by other students. And that was just a really popular way to go. So I think our podcast kind of served as models for other ones too. But it's fun to listen to. Like the kids, we try to put in humor, and we made it for other elementary age kids. So there's episodes about the Constitution, about space, about Native Americans, and there's still, you can still look up Radio Willow Web in iTunes and find those podcasts.
Now, are they still continuing on?
Well, when I left the school, they took the opportunity to make the position halftime, so that made things a little harder. So they haven't published one, I think, in like 2 years, which is really sad because we had a really good thing going.
Yeah.
Well, you're also quite popular. I mean, you're. It seems like you buy into all this stuff super early. And so one of the other things is you're quite popular on Twitter. Did you decide to connect with other people using social media platforms pretty early as well? And what was that journey like for you?
And I usually ask people, how did you become a connected educator? And I was thinking about this, and I thought, well, it really started from having my classroom website in the Yahoo directory really early, because my connectedness was through email. I had people that said, oh, yeah, I live in Missouri, and I just want you to know I really love your website, or I have a question. And I would have these people that I'd email with, these other teachers, periodically, and we just kind of say, you know, oh, they'd see something on my website, and saying, we did this in our class, and we really connected that way, and then it kind of evolved into blogs and leaving comments for each other, and then we kind of jumped on to Twitter. And so the same people who, many of them I started through this email thread, have now just kind of just follow the social networks along.
Mm-hmm. Since you now do consulting and those kinds of things, have you ever had and you do public speaking as well, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so have you ever had a fear doing that public speaking? Or what was the first experience like, your public speaking experience?
Well, I taught in Nebraska, and Nebraska has actually one of the largest state ed tech conferences. You may not realize that, but Nebraska.
No, I didn't know that, yeah.
And so I spoke there about talking about our website and stuff, and that was pretty fun. I was a little intimidated, but I always knew that if I just talked about something I knew myself, like that I know inside and out, I'm fine. I mean, I can talk about my students and what they've done all day long, so that wasn't a big deal. But there was, it was in 2002, I believe, there was a handheld conference in Michigan, and their keynoter kind of fell through. And so they asked me, would you fly up here and would you keynote? We'll even pay you money. And I'm like, oh, sure. And then I got really nervous because we had dinner with the other speakers, and they're talking about all these things I had never heard of before. There were all these accessories for Palm Pilots that I had, and all these apps. I'm like, I don't know what you're even talking about. So then I got back to my hotel that night, and I was just like, what am I going to do? I can't, these people know so much more than me. But then when I refocused and thought, all the examples are things that my kids have done. I'm just talking about what happens in my classroom and what students can do and the results of that. I can do it. And it worked out. And so I think that's been my philosophy every time I speak now, is I want to talk about things that I know about, because then I'll be comfortable about it.
Yeah, for sure. All this talk about the Palm Pilots makes me just think back to, I had one of those in my pocket. But that was really cool technology in the 90s. That was super cutting edge stuff. Yeah, that's cool that you use that.
I don't even know how it is.
You're too young. See, I'm 40. I'm almost 40 at least. So yeah, I had some Palm Pilots in my pockets for sure.
Well, and it reminds me of, I got Google Glass this week. I think I'm returning it, though, because I'm not doing a lot with it. But because I'm embarrassed, I don't think I'd wear it anywhere.
No, yeah, I don't know.
And the Palm Pilot back then, I had a Palm Pilot when I was taking my master's degree classes and to staff meetings, but I would write on paper and then put it in there later because I was too embarrassed to get it out. Because at that time, it was just not acceptable to have any kind of device that you're, getting out during class or during meetings at that time.
Let's talk about the glass for a second. So what do you like about it? What things do you like about it?
Well, the main reason I got it is that I'm the proud father of twins. They just turned one last week.
Oh, cool. Congratulations. And
I thought, there's so many times by the time I reach to get my phone out to take a picture, the moment's over. And yeah. So I thought, oh, if I'm wearing these, then I can get some really good shots. And, the things, the funny faces they make at me that they won't do. Because the second they see an iPhone,
right,
they just want to grab it. That's all they want to do. So I thought, with this. And I have got some good videos of them on it, but the thing is I have to be wearing them. So by the time they're doing something, let me put these on.
Right.
Well, then it's faster for me to get my phone. So it didn't quite work out for the video thing. I just got to sit around just wearing them all day. But
yeah. So the glass is just clear glass then in the glasses?
There's no glasses.
There's no glass at all on there?
You can put some. You can get some, but no, it's just really, they're just glass. I think the glass refers more to this piece here.
Gotcha. I didn't even realize it didn't have a clear piece in there.
Which makes it all the more attractive.
Yeah, they need to start selling prescription glasses. I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah.
Well, you also do a lot of work with the Arizona's Tech Camp Conference. How did that come about? What is it, and where can people? It still happens today, right?
Yeah, we're actually in the midst of planning our ninth year of Tech Camp. I've worked at the Arizona K-12 Center. They're a state agency here in Arizona. For 9 years, and everything can be tied back to these Palm Pilots. At the very first Tech Camp 9 years ago, they gave a Palm Pilot to every teacher who came to this week-long event. And they're we need somebody to show the teachers what they can do with it. So they had me speak for a day, and then the next year they said, you know how to do other things, right, besides Palm Pilots? I said, yeah. So they're like, how about you speak every day? And the next year, would you mind just organizing it for us? So It's great. We've had 1 or 2 weeks of camp every year, and what I love is that we get a group of 125 teachers. They spend 5 days in one learning strand. So they're in class for 5 days all day long with a group of 25, and we have really great facilitators for these sessions, and we change them every year so they're updated. But the teachers love that they actually get to sit down and do something for because most, you know, most tech professional development is, you know, a conference where you're going from one thing to another, or maybe a day or maybe a 2 day workshop if you're lucky. And here we're really lucky where we're able to offer teachers a whole week.
Now, is it during the summer?
It is during the summer. And luckily, in Arizona, the resorts are very cheap, so we can actually be at a very nice resort, but it's not costing us very much money at all because it's just so hot, nobody wants to come visit then.
Yeah.
And is it open to any teachers or just Arizona teachers?
It's just Arizona teachers because it's paid for partly by the K-12 center, and teachers pay a small portion of it.
Right.
Okay. The K-12 center, we started putting on the mobile learning experience, and we've had that for 3 years, and that's open to anybody, though it is a conference.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Chris and I have both heard about that.
Yeah, that's the one you did the video scribe for, right?
I did, yeah. Okay, that's what connected us.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so we've done that conference too, and I think we're going to have another one in 2015. So
cool. Is that the one that John Samuelson came out to? Did he come to that?
Yeah, he's come to all three that we've had.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
We met at the very first one, and it was the first one was in 2011, so it was kind of iPads were pretty just really kind of just getting started. So there's really some great networking and connections that happened on the first one, and now people who come to the first one they seem to want to keep coming back, which is great.
Yeah, cool. Very cool.
So do you have one in plan for 2014?
We don't because because of availability of venues, the one thing you want in a mobile conference is you want to have Wi-Fi that works.
Yeah.
And between Phoenix and Tucson here, there aren't that many venues that have Wi-Fi that meet our needs. And then if you take out when they're available and when they're available during a season that teachers can come and when it's affordable, it gives us this very little narrow window. So we're going to move it probably to a summertime. We don't have an official date yet, but it'll probably be summer. So that means that this summer we'll skip and we'll go to the next one.
And how many days is that?
Three, though we start later on the first day after 1 o'clock so that people who are flying in can come, and then we have a dinner keynote that night. And it's pretty
just
funny.
Breakout sessions, that can normally...
Yeah, breakout sessions, keynotes. We did an Ignite session, so we had those fast-paced five-minute presentations.
Those are cool.
Those are always fun because they're always fun to watch, whether you're interested in the topic or not, to see how somebody manages only 5 seconds.
Yeah, for sure.
Five minutes of time.
That's one of the most stressful presentations I've ever given was an Ignite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. And Todd talks like a mile a minute, so to hear that he's stressed out in that situation, I can't imagine what it is for a normal person.
Well, and at our tech camp, we've had Ignite nights for the last several years. So I actually coach the teachers who participate about it. It's not speed. It's like you say 2 sentences per slide.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
more of an art form than trying to be the.
It is. It really is.
Auctioneer. Yeah.
I would love to do that as like a professional development on campus or something. I think that would work out really well. You know, you'd have to get everyone buying into wanting to do something like that. I would figure that
I've always bribed the people, so if they, cause it's very intimidating to be
for sure.
Night, so we'd give away an iPad or something, and we'd draw a name out of the people who present, so that kind of gives them the extra push. But they all say the same thing. This took way longer than I thought to prepare, even though it's only 5 minutes. It's true. And they thought they were nervous all the way up to it, but they're all glad they did it because they learned so much. We had one school who, after coming to tech camp, they decided that their parent night at the high school was going to be all Ignites. So the parents, they knew that they're going to sit, they're going to get 5 minutes of Ignite time, then they get like, I don't know, maybe it's like 5 to 10 minutes of question time, and they go to the next class.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Well, I know I got to bring this up too. This isn't in the questions, Chris, but I know you recently got, I guess, booked for Miami Device come next November. And so I'm excited because I'm going to be there too and I'll get to meet you. But how did that come about for you? Did Felix contact you? Do you know him or how did that come about?
Yeah, yeah. I've known Felix for a long time. He came to one of my workshops that I did in Miami years ago. And we've always kind of kept in contact. And then his school decided they wanted to get iPads. So St. Stephen's Episcopal Day School in Coconut Grove, Florida. Beautiful place where Miami Device will be. This was 3 years ago now, I think, where I went like the week before school starts, and I showed the teachers some of the things they could do with the iPod or iPads they were getting. They weren't going one-to-one. They were going to have like some class sets to share or something, but their head of school saw how excited the teachers were about what they learned. She said, "We've got to get this for all our students." So they did, and it wasn't really just about the iPads. We were talking project-based learning, so they wanted the tools to do really good project-based learning, and so I've come back every year and have done more development with those teachers, and it's just been fun to see a school come along, and Felix is an excellent leader there. Yeah. So they've come to the mobile learning experience here in Arizona, and they thought, we're doing great things. They have a great venue. Their school's in the middle of like all these restaurants and shopping. That it's a great venue for a conference. So
so no pressure, and you don't have to fanboy out anything, but if you had one device to tell teachers that they had to get for students, what would that mobile device be?
You know, it's such a personal thing that I think it's the one that they're comfortable with or that the students are comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You know,
great.
And did I dodge that one? I always say some consideration to think about is if students are sharing a device, the iPad is not very good for that because there's not multiple users. So laptops, Chromebooks, MacBooks, and even Android tablets now can do multiple users. That might be a better way to go. But I am a big fan of iPads, so
yeah,
me personally, that's what I would pick.
Yeah,
I wouldn't tell other teachers what to do.
Being in middle school, we had an iPad cart that was on our campus for just a couple months or so, and we ended up sending it back or sending it to another campus in our district and buying a couple of Chromebook carts instead, just because. You know, for what I do with it, these kids are out there sharing, and they use Google Docs and Drive and all that stuff, and they're typing a lot, and, it just worked out better for me as a middle school teacher. But, you know, like you said, it's to each his own. It's however you're going to use it. Like, you know, maybe elementary, that would be, iPads would be better or
yeah,
whatever,
I think,
you know?
Yeah, you wouldn't want Chromebooks in kindergarten, but iPads in kindergarten are great.
They're killer, yeah, for sure. So if you could go back 5 or 10 years and give yourself some advice, what would you tell yourself?
Huh. That's a good question. Is what people say when they're trying to buy time to answer it.
Well, you're not supposed to give yourself away.
Yeah, I know. One of the things that happened, and it was, I guess 5 to 10 years ago, is when I was leaving my school, and that was a scary thing. Like, to be self-employed is scary, and the one thing that gave me some confidence is I won a teaching award in 2005, and it's one that comes with like a ridiculously large check, like in size, but then also in amount.
Oh, so, nice.
And it was a surprise, and it was really fun, so I just put that money in the bank, and I just kept it there, and I thought, okay, now if I leave my school and things don't work out in the self-employed thing, at least I have some money to live off of until I get back into a teaching job. But I was just scared, so I'd probably tell myself, you know, it's going to work out, stick with it, and it has.
Cool.
Well, you know, we've all had these times in our career where we've fallen flat on our face or made this huge mistake and we take it and we learn from it. Can you think of a time, any time in your career when you've just really learned from a mistake that you've made?
Well, if I think of consulting, I've kind of learned it wasn't anything too terrible, but the right questions to ask before I go into a school. Things can be blocked. Knowing what the teacher's attitudes are toward things, you know, there's nothing worse than getting to a place and not meeting the needs of the teacher. So I really ask a lot of questions now so I know exactly what I'm getting into. Yeah. As far as teaching, I think, I did a lot of multimedia with students and back in the colorful iMac days, iMovie didn't work so well, so we could have entire projects we were doing, and they would just disappear, and you could never get them back again. The file would be corrupted. I mean, there were things like that that we just learned, okay, we save often, we make copies. I've always wanted to do things differently. So one thing I tried, I actually didn't get to try it. I just started planning it, and I was pretty committed to this idea. With fifth grade, we teach American history, and I thought, we never get past the Civil War, and I think all the good stuff is, like, after it. So what if we taught history backwards? We'll start with current day, and we'll keep going back. Well, I think I was on a roll, and then it just unraveled, and I thought, this can't be done. Like,
there's a reason we do it this way.
You have to understand what happened before, but at least I... At least you tried.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's more than a lot of folks would do. So, what about advice for a new teacher? New teacher coming out in 2014, ready to hit the ground running. Any advice that you would give that person?
I think connecting with other teachers and letting them help you as much as possible. I had a really crazy first year of teaching, doing my master's degree at the same time, and night classes and stuff. So luckily I worked with the best teachers around who wanted to give me so much advice. And I took most of it, but some of it I kind of stubborn. I want to make this myself. I want to do this myself when sure. I could have saved a lot of time by just really... listening to what others have told me, because they've done it before, and they knew I was running myself into the ground, being at school Sunday from like noon until 2 a.m. working on the next week.
Well, what about for veteran teachers? Would you have the same kind of advice, or would you give something different?
Yeah, I think probably a little different there, because you kind of know what you're doing, and you can then start trying different things that nobody else has done, or again, reach out to others and see what's happening. And I know there's their comfort level of doing, pulling out the December file and doing the same thing. But just for me, I couldn't do that. Like, if I did it last year, I just had a hard time doing it again, because I want something new and different myself. But I also like things that work. So
yeah, it's a fine line.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, being in education, we all have those connections that we make with parents or students or other staff members that something happens that sticks with us forever. Can you think of an experience in your career that with either a parent or another student or another staff member that you'll just remember?
Well, I tell the story often, but it's a good one, because it was a big learning experience for me. In the fifth grade classroom, sometimes there's things that the kids want to tell you that they don't want to tell you to your face. So I always had this policy that you can write a note and just leave it on my desk. And so the students are all working, and I remember I was like typing an email to a parent or something while the kids are working. And then Austin, I could see out of the corner of my eye, one of the fifth graders, he set this note on my desk. And I thought, okay, I'll wait for him to walk away before I read it. And then I'm still typing, and I could tell he was still there. So he taps the note, and I still haven't looked up, and I'm like, okay, oh, he wants me to read it now. And so I open up the note, and we had just studied, like, writing a friendly letter and capitalization, and he had followed that to the letter. I was very proud of him. It said, "Dear Mr. Vincent, comma, said, I just threw up, period. It's in my mouth. May I go to the restroom? ? Sincerely, comma, Austin." So I looked up, and he has these chipmunk cheeks. Like, I'm like, yes, you may go. And then so he scuttles off to the restroom. But it all came because the other day one of the kids got in trouble because they were leaving the room without permission. I'm like, you can't just leave the room. I gotta know where you are. So you must have permission for you to leave the room. You all got that. And so he took that to heart, and it was a learning experience for me, knowing that I gotta teach my kids that to make some of their own decisions, not just to follow everything I say exactly, because it doesn't always work out. Like, you shouldn't be holding puke in your mouth.
I can't believe you wrote that. That is hilarious.
I know. And I should have kept that letter, but I didn't. It's like one thing I just really, really remember. It was a very sweet kid.
That's hilarious. So what about, what you would kind of always like to end on this question, what are you really passionate about right now in education?
I guess it comes down to I like to teach, I like to learn, and I like to make things. So I want to do everything I can to to empower teachers and students to make stuff. And we have so many great websites and apps to do that, which is really exciting. Sitting here in front of my computer, I've been here for like trapped in here for days now, making tutorials for an app that I've been working on for 2 years, and it's going to be released probably next week.
Oh, cool!
It's called Stick Around. It'll be for iPad, and it's where you can make your own labeling and sorting puzzles, and then you can share them with others. And there's not another app like it, and I really wanted to try my hand at what apps can do. Now, I did not program it. I don't know how to program, so I partnered with the people who make the Explain Everything app.
Oh, cool.
Which is one of the most popular educational apps out there. So it's kind of, and it works actually hand-in-hand with Explain Everything as well. But I just had a lot of fun making these little puzzles, and then you can share them with others, and I can't wait to see kids make these puzzles.
So go a little more in-depth about what you can do. Like, if I'm a kid, what am I doing with it? Or if I'm a teacher, what am I doing with it?
Yeah, so either teachers, I definitely will make these puzzles, but I say, you know, when students make their own study aids, it only aids in their own studying.
Sure.
So you can start from a template or start from scratch, and you design a background. So the background could be a picture of, say, a plant, and then you're learning the parts of a plant. So that you draw the background, then you bring these stickers in, and you label the parts either with an arrow or with a line underneath, and then each sticker can have audio attached to it. They can even go to a website. And then when you send it to somebody else to play, they get your background and they get your stickers in a pile, and then they pull the stickers over. And then the cool thing is you've made an answer key. So it will tell you if you're right or wrong. And that's pretty fun too. So
I love it.
We've kept it very open-ended, and I hope that I just can't wait to see what people come up with.
Yeah. I can't wait to play with it with my kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great idea.
So if I can put in a plug for stickaround.info.
Perfect.
To my website. There's a little trailer video there, like a 90-second little video that kind of just takes you through some of the things you can do.
And so then, it's stickaround.info?
Stickaround.info, yeah.
And we'll put that in the show notes, too, for the website.
Awesome. Sure. Thanks.
Is that a paid app or...?
It will be paid. It'll be $2.99.
Okay.
When I do workshops, I always do free apps and that. But putting something like this together, you know, again, I did a lot for the learning experience of how an app is designed and made.
Sure.
We've been working on it almost for 2 years.
Yeah.
And app development is so expensive. By the
design. Yeah. No, don't apologize for being paid.
No, man,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But I just want it is tens of thousands of dollars for an app.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
It's crazy.
I've looked into it. I've had several ideas, and it's ridiculously expensive if you don't, no coding. And, it goes out to, it's not just one person that can do this. You're probably talking about several developers working on this.
It's a team of people, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's...
But it's been so fun to see it come together, and now I'm just, like, tickled that, it's in Apple's hands right now, and, of course, they rejected it the first time for a minor technical thing, so I think it'll be approved this next time, and it'll probably be next week.
That's amazing. That's so exciting. Yeah, super
we'll
exciting.
We'll be on the lookout for it because, I mean, it's just like Explain Everything. It's one of those apps that, I mean, from what it sounds like, I mean, it's one of those that it's worth the minimal amount up front that you'd have to pay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there are apps like this where if you wanted to label parts of the human body, you can buy an app for that. If you wanted to sort parts of speech, there you can buy an app for that, and we... Kind of my theme of doing things backwards is that, well, we should just maybe, we don't give, all the puzzles are free, everything you make is free, it's just that you actually make them yourself instead of somebody else making them for you and charging you for the puzzle, but the app is free.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So I guess I'm up next. I'm scrolling down here. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for being here. We really appreciate you taking the time, and it's good to finally connect with you. I know that we've had some exchanges about VideoScribe on Twitter over the last summer, and you taught me some things.
Hey, and I gotta jump in here, Tony, and let you know this. When you responded to Chris's tweet, he flipped out because – he was like, oh, my God. And I was getting screenshots. He was like, look, Tony, watch my thing. He responded. And then you tweeted something about me a couple of weeks or months later, and I did the same thing to Chris. I was like, look, Tony said something to me, too. I'm just
I always think it's just so cool to connect with someone that they actually took the time to look at what you're doing and look at what you, you know. I just think it's neat. I mean, I learned from you how to do, you know, that video scribe, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And, you know, and since then I've taught several other people how to do it. It's just such a cool thing to connect with other educators and
especially when you have this video at conferences and workshops. And
oh, cool.
People are just like their jaws are dropped and they're so excited about Genius Hour.
Yeah, that's totally cool. Yeah. It's very cool. Everyone's got their own little niche and it's fun when it all comes together and we all, you know, share each other's stuff and it's very cool.
Yeah, I've watched that video so many times now that hearing your voice is kind of funny. Hearing you say something other than what you say in the video.
You know, my buddy, he's this big audiophile, and I just recorded it with this. I actually recorded it straight off the iPad. I didn't even have a microphone or anything, so the audio is not like high quality or anything. But my buddy, he's like, man, I give your video production a 10, but your audio is like a 4. And I'm like, man, what a jerk, you know, but whatever. I thought it came out just fine.
I thought the audio sounded great.
Yeah, myself. I thought it sounded fine. I'm like, you're just nitpicking at me right now.
Well, Tony, how can people find you online, your website and all that kind of stuff?
My website's learninginhand.com. And then if you scroll to the bottom, there's little icons for every kind of social media network you can think of down there. And on Twitter, I'm Tony Vincent. And one thing to know about me is I do answer all of my emails, usually within 24 hours.
Yeah, that's cool.
Wow. That's impressive.
It is. Another side of me is personal productivity. And so I like getting a lot done with a little bit of time. And I try to be as efficient as possible. It's almost like a game to me now.
Yeah,
but people are always surprised when I actually answer the email and answer them like within a few hours. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Todd?
Well,
go ahead.
We've got some great upcoming guests for those of you who are listening. You can check out all the previous recordings on eduallstars.com, but on Monday, December 16th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, we've got a resident Texan, Amy Mayer, and then that same week, on Wednesday, December 18th at 8 p.m., we have librarian Shannon Miller. We're doing a twofer that week because the next week is Christmas, and Chris and I will be enjoying our week off. So we're going to go ahead and get two in. So we are excited to talk to those two awesome women that we know and get to share their story with y'all.
Cool. And if you've made it this far, we always just encourage you to just leave some feedback for us on iTunes if you like the show. And it really helps out with the ratings and you know, when you bounce around and just hundreds of people can, you know, just bouncing up a couple spots in iTunes, it really can make a huge impact on the number of ears on the podcast. So appreciate the feedback if you like it. And that's it. You're